Hi, this is Mac of Mac's List. Find Your Dream Job is presented by Mac's List, an online community where you can find free resources for your job search, plus online courses and books that help you advance your career. My latest book is called Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. It's a reference guide for your career that covers all aspects of the job search, including expert advice in every chapter. You can get the first chapter for free by visiting maxlist.org/anywhere.
This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm Ben Forsteg, your fill-in host and managing director of Mac's List. Mac Pritchard, your usual host, is still feeling under the weather, but guarantees us he'll be back next week. I'm joined today with my co-hosts, Becky Thomas and Jessica Black from the Mac's List team. And today we're talking about the truth about job postings. Competing for a publicly posted job is tough. Sometimes you're up against an internal candidate. Other times, recruiters working for the hiring manager get involved. And because the position is online, it may attract hundreds or thousands of applicants. This week's guest is Christine Laporte, a career coach and former recruiter. She says before you apply for job postings you see online, you need to know how the system works. Christine and I talk about the truth about job postings later on in the show. Regular listeners of our show know about the importance of networking during a job search. It's one of the best ways to discover up to 80% of jobs that never get advertised. Becky has found a new tool called Mango. It helps you network online more effectively so you can uncover those jobs that are filled by word of mouth. She'll tell us more in a moment. You get a job right after high school graduation, and you stay with this employer for 15 years. Along the way, you get promotions without having a college degree. Now you've left the company, and you're finding that every job that interests you requires a bachelor's degree. What do you do? That's our question of the week. It comes from listener Jermaine Coldis, who lives in the Bay Area in California. Jessica shares her advice shortly. First, as always, let's check in with the Mac's List team. Becky, you're the lady with all the resources. What do you have for us this week?
So this week's resource is Mango. It's a networking app, and I discovered Mango through Twitter when they started sharing some of our Mac's List tweets. So that's one way to get my attention. And their message really aligns with what we talk about every day. You've heard these messages before if you listen to our podcast or read our blogs on maxlist.org, all that good stuff. These messages we like really hammer home every day. The best jobs never get posted online. Use your network to get referrals for jobs. Reach out and ask for help. All of these things are smart and people understand them, but many people get overwhelmed when it comes to the actual act of networking. What are you supposed to actually do? Like how should you reach out? Things like that. And I think this is totally legitimate. It's when you get into the details and it's like, well, I understand I need to connect with people, but I don't know how to actually do it. So I think Mango was really built off of that idea. It looks like it should be like a great next step for job seekers who really know that they need to network, but just need some help in that nitty gritty, actually sending emails, like sending connection requests. Like how do you actually connect with somebody that you've never met in person? The detailed step-by-step networking. So that's exactly what Mango does. It's really a step-by-step networking app that guides you through the tasks that you need to do to connect and then get value from your network. It basically overlays or plugs into your LinkedIn profile and allows you to like enter in specific people that you want to connect with, whether you're already connected with them or you want to connect with them. And then you can sort of type in some of the relevant info from these people's LinkedIn profiles. And Mango categorizes people into four different categories. So they have like guide, connector, supporter, advisor. It's basically like what this person could be to you in your career. And there's a bunch of different things that it does after it gets that sort of person's profile. So it'll give you like a checklist for tasks that you should try to deepen your connection with this person. Like if you're trying to get an informational interview with them, like what you should say in your first email, things like that. There's examples, coaching, and like templates even for these email messages. So it'll like sort of guide you through like sentence by sentence what you should be writing in these messages to help you really it handholds you through that networking process so you can sort of learn it. And it gives like outlines that you can take along with you to an informational meeting, things like that. And there's a free version available. So I would definitely advise, you know, whether you're new to the workforce or just new to this sort of networking first idea of job search, this is a really great tool to get started once you understand the concept, but just don't know where to go next. So you can learn more at mangoconnects.com. And I think you can download the app in iTunes and Android app stores. So yeah, check it out. And I'll include links in the show notes.
So, Becky, just to clarify, this is a supplement to LinkedIn, not a replacement.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, you definitely have to have your LinkedIn profile set up. And then once you connect your Mango account, it'll sort of feed in all of your connections and all the information from your profile as well.
It sounds like an extension.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Chrome extension
or something
like that.
I was thinking, it's like if LinkedIn is your bicycle, like, Mango is your training wheels. Like, it sort of helps you, like...
But with handy
like
resources.
Yeah.
Or it's like your Siri...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Or it's like, it's, to, you know, like...
It's brand new and innovative. We don't even have a correlation.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I can't think of like the...
No, I think that's really helpful. It's kind of like the resource that you shared a couple of weeks ago that has like similar, like kind of breaking it down and making it easy to digest. Mm-hmm. And I apologize, I forget
was
the
it
name
Land
that.
It? Because
yes.
That platform I've been recommending to everyone as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one because I remember having like feeling really excited about that one too. But
yeah.
I mean, I like that's the same concept of like just making it really easy to break this down into digestible steps that people can take rather than, I think you said it perfectly, of like it's people know that they need to do it,
yeah.
But how, like, what are the first steps and how do they do it well?
Exactly.
And being able to have templates and things like that. And I don't know, it'd be interesting to try because I'm learning about it now just from hearing about it. But it sounds really interesting.
Yeah, cool.
Well, thank you, Becky. And if any of our listeners have a suggestion for Becky, write her and we might share your idea on the show. Becky's address is becky@maxlist.org. Now it's time to hear from you, our listeners. Jessica joins us to answer one of your questions. What do we have today, Jessica?
This question is from Jermaine Coldis of the Bay Area in California, and she emailed in a question. She asks, I started working immediately after high school and never got a college degree. I stayed with the same company for 15 years, working my way up the ladder, so my lack of degree was never a huge barrier. I've since left that company, and now I find that having a college degree seems to be holding me back from jobs that I know I could do. Nearly every job I'm interested in requires a BA. Do you have any advice for how I can work around this? So this is a good question, because I think that it's so silly that you would have to have a bachelor's degree when you have all this experience, but again... The best way to get around these types of requirements is to make these in-person connections with people in the organizations that you want to work for to kind of go around that just online barrier. Because unless people know that you have the skills to do the job, they're not gonna know. And so if there is a requirement that says that a BA is required and you don't have that on your job, on your resume or your cover letter or whatever online application you're using, then it will likely kind of automatically get thrown out, which is unfortunate. But again, so that's why these in-person connections are really important. And it's also really important to clearly demonstrate your skills and your ability to perform the required tasks. So things like volunteering, any type of portfolio or videos or supplementary documents that you might have that you could based on industries, of course, make sure that it's relevant. But if you can include those types of things, or having endorsements, all of those things, especially on your LinkedIn profile, will really help you stand out. But again, won't necessarily do very well in an online application where there may be an ATS system in place where it'll kind of automatically get weeded out. Yeah, I mean, that's just unfortunate, but it's true. I would also recommend just meeting with some people in the industry that you're in and in the positions that you're interested in pursuing and with the organizations that you're interested in to get a feel for how you might be able to break in using your existing skills and, again, make those really strong connections that will basically provide advocates for you within the organization that will help get around those requirements. That still may not always work. I don't know what industry Jermaine is in and how important it is to have a BA in this situation. But again, if she's been doing this work without a BA, I know that she's fully qualified. So, but if there's quite a bit of pushback still from organizations, when you have those in-person conversations, those informational interviews about the necessity of a bachelor's degree, you may want to consider the option of taking that on. Or again, I'm not quite sure what would be relevant, but I would recommend looking into some kind of certificate program or something to that effect to supplement your work experience to showcase that you have sort of like the book smarts components of it. And some employers are really interested in having that kind of schooling experience. And so maybe that would be a good workaround. But again, I would feel that out within those informational interviews to get a sense of what the best options would be. What else would you guys recommend in terms of this bachelor's degree conundrum?
So I'll chime in here. Whenever someone tells me, like, I found a great job, but I don't meet all the requirements, the first thing I tell them is go ahead and apply anyway. Because oftentimes in job descriptions, those requirements are a wish list, and the hiring manager will be happy if they get 50% of what they're asking for, 75%, they'd probably be ecstatic.
Do you think that's true with bachelor's degrees?
So I think there are some jobs where clearly you need to have the education. You're right. Not going to be a doctor without an MD.
Totally.
Don't apply for that. But a BA, the farther away or the longer into your career you are, the less your formal education matters.
Right.
A BA is really important early in your career because it shows like you've gotten some formal education. You know how to learn. You've been trained in reading and writing and some of the basics. If you've got 15 years of experience, Jermaine, the employers already know that you can do the job, especially if you've worked your way up the ladder in an organization. That shows you know what you're doing, you do a really good job, you can take on new responsibilities, you can learn new skills on the job, and you can execute well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes employers just put BA required in their applications because that's what they've always done, or maybe to weed people out. I think you're right. If there is a online application process through like an applicant tracking system, if they put like a qualifying question there that says like, do you have a bachelor's degree? And it's a yes or no. If you click no, you're probably going to be pushed into the no pile for the applications. But if you're applying through the traditional method, just sending an email with a cover letter and a resume, mm-hmm. you're probably okay just applying anyway. Again, if you've got a good track record in your career, that's going to stand on its own. And especially 15 years into your career, I wouldn't sweat the absence of a BA.
Yeah. And it may be, I want to hear your perspective, Becky, but I just wanted to chime in something that I just thought of as you were talking, Ben, that it may also be a framing of her skills kind of opportunity of making sure that you're laying out your experience in a very easy to understand way so that it's not just that you've worked at the same organization for 15 years and the job titles that you've held, but like all of the duties that you've had and really like, you know, knock that point out of the park that you have that ability.
Yeah. I think of your BA or any kind of education is basically a reference, right? Your degree is basically a reference from the university that says this person went to school here for 4 years, met the minimum qualifications, and passed through. Again, this is a really important thing to have early in your career because you don't have a whole lot of professional experience and professional references to fall back on. But Jermaine, I would say she's probably had two or three managers at most who could speak to her qualifications. She doesn't need to rely on that education as the reference point. She can actually have real managers who've seen her really work on the job to speak to her abilities.
I think you guys are all spot on. The only other thing I would say is I feel like I keep seeing more and more jobs that say bachelor's or relevant, you know, experience, like equivalent experience. So I feel like if you're looking at job descriptions that are really like, don't apply for this job unless you have a bachelor's degree, like that's pretty short-sighted of them too.
Totally.
But I think for like rereading her question, she might just be a little apprehensive. So I think that like, just go for it, apply for some of those jobs and just really sell the experience that you've had working your way up this company ladder through 15 years and, you know, going to work right after high school. And just like, it sounds like Jermaine is really a dedicated hard worker. And so she just needs to, you know, tell that story in applications and hope that they can understand that.
Yeah. Great advice. Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you, Jessica, and thank you, Jermaine, for your question. If you have a question, send Jessica an email at jessica@maxlist.org. You could also call our listener line, 716-JOB-TALK, or you can send us a message on Facebook. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a copy of Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. When we return, I'll talk with our guest, Christine Laporte, about the truth about job postings. We live in a digital world, and what we do online can make all the difference in a job search. Consider this. In a recent survey, 98% of recruiters said they use LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter to find candidates. So if you're not on these platforms, you are invisible to employers. Yes, social media can be overwhelming. That's why here at MaxList, we built our free online course, How to Wow and Woo Employers Online. In 3 lessons, we show you how to make the most of social media in your job search. You'll learn what matters to employers who check you out online, how to create and manage social profiles that attract the attention of hiring managers, and how to use your social accounts to grow and serve your professional network. To sign up for this free online course, visit maxlist.org/wow. Again, that's maxlist.org/wow. Now let's get back to the show. Christine Laporte has been a talent recruiter for Nike, Columbia Sportswear, Rejuvenation, and RGA. As the owner of PDX Career Coach, Christine gives creative professionals the tools and strategies they need to connect with hiring managers and get competitive salaries. Christine joins us today from Portland, Oregon. Thanks for joining us, Christine.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Well, it's a pleasure having you on the show. So today we're going to talk about the truth of job postings. But before we get into that topic, I need to ask you a very special question. I was doing a little bit of snooping on your website today, and I just, I see that, is it true that you dated Tim Duncan in college?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
Okay. So my real question is he really that tall in real life?
Yes. And I'm so happy for him that he's retired by now. You know, he's very old. I mean, he's what, 41. So, but he gives so much back to the community, which is wonderful. So he's always donating to children who have suffered a loss. And I just think he's a great stand-up guy. So I'm glad we're still friends.
That's great. Okay. Now let's get to the important stuff here. Let's talk about the truth about job postings. We're going to talk about why some jobs get advertised and others don't. And we're also going to discuss why even advertised jobs might not be real. You're here today to help us pull back the curtain on the role recruiters play in advertised jobs. So let's reveal here what I think a lot of people already kind of know, which is just because a position has been posted online doesn't mean that there's actually an opening, does it?
Absolutely. People have a misconception when they're looking through job postings that all of these jobs are opportunities they could apply for online and possibly receive a call and get a job. So I like to share with my clients, there are a number of reasons a job could be posted online. So those are that somebody possibly could be leaving, they need to backfill that position, but maybe that person won't leave. If it's an agency, they could have an RFP, request for proposal for work, and they're up against a number of other agencies with a client. And if they receive that piece of work, they would hire that entire team. And if they don't, they might not hire anybody from the postings.
So, you know, they're trying to proactively hire in case they get some future work.
Absolutely. And as a recruiter, it's always good to have your pipelines be full with talent. So often people are searching to fill those pipelines with producers, designers, web developers, etc. But they might not have secured budget for those opportunities. So there are a number of reasons those jobs could be posted. And I that's important for people to know when they're applying.
And sometimes those jobs that are posted, they're real jobs, but they're not like a permanent full-time job, right?
Exactly. Also, jobs are often posted and it's unclear if that is a contract, if it's full-time or part-time, and when it could start. Because often people post jobs for budget they know they will secure, but maybe not until a quarter down the line, like Q2 or Q3. So they're actually sourcing now, but the start date could be very far in the future. So I always encourage clients of mine, to ask when they're having those conversations, when the client is looking to bring that person on, and the duration, if it's full-time or part-time, really digging in to clarify about that job posting.
So I have to say, Christine, you know, this system where jobs might not be real or the employer is just posting it because they're kind of forced to and they've already have an internal candidate in mind, this doesn't seem like a really candidate-friendly way to do hiring.
So there, I would say it might not be exactly candidate-friendly. Often legally, jobs do have to be posted, even if there is an internal candidate. And it shows growth because it does portray that a company is hiring all of those people. And possibly they could, you know, be looking at those job descriptions and looking at the candidates who are applying. But I always like to share with my talent as well very eye-opening statistics, which is I went to a party with one of my Fortune 500 apparel clients, the recruiters who work there, and we were talking about it, and they said, which I have experienced the same, that they receive 100 to 1,000 or more unique applicants per job posting.
Wow.
And that could be one recruiter working on up to 10 or more jobs. So the math, that could be up to 10,000 applications that are coming in for their job postings. So think about, do they have the time or the bandwidth or even the interest to look through all of those applications? I think we know the answer. And then secondly, the majority of my talent that I have brought in for interviews and that I've later secured opportunities did not apply to jobs. It was a very small percentage, especially at my last role as an internal recruiter. So I think less than 5, maybe out of 50 to 100, you know, job postings were from people who had applied online.
Wow, those numbers tell you a lot. So from a candidate perspective, is there any way to tell whether a job is, quote, real or not real, or to kind of get the backstory on what that job's all about? Or do you just kind of have to apply and see what happens?
So because of the huge volume of applicants, most people that we've spoken to, and I have experienced the same myself, that when you apply to a job, you often have a canned response that comes back to you, we've received your application, or no response. So applying to a job and expecting to get it is maybe not realistic, depending on your skill set, unless you have a very specific skill set, like you're a Ruby on Rails web developer or something that's very hard to find. You know a specific program. But if you have a general skill set, such as a designer, a producer, something in marketing, et cetera, it's very likely that that recruiter, similar to myself, is hiring somebody who is a referral, either from their network or because their internal staff is referring a friend or somebody they know. So that is the best way to get a job, is to be that referral or know somebody in the company.
I totally agree. I'm going to push you on a number here. So you said you shouldn't really expect to get a job if you're doing like a cold apply that you found the job posting someplace. Do you have any idea like what percentage of candidates are found through that, you know, applying through a job board or through the employer's online career center page?
I would say it depends, again, on if it's a very linear career and if it's outside the creative industry, if it's something in healthcare, et cetera, but if it's in the creative field, a very small percentage, unless they have a very specific skill set. The majority of people I know are securing opportunities through their network, which leads to when people are putting time and energy into looking for work and they say, oh, I've applied to 50, 100, et cetera, jobs online. I encourage people, take that time to build and nurture your network of internal employees who work at the company that you're interested in, because that is how I have secured every job I've ever had, with the exception of one that I applied to online and didn't enjoy because I had no investment or interest in the company. Every job besides that, at Rolling Stone, Adidas, out in the Advocate magazines, all of the above, CMD, RGA, were not from applying to a job posting. They were by finding an internal employee that I connected with, and then they referred me for that opportunity.
Absolutely. So I think we're going to jump over to the networking topic in just a few minutes here, but I wanted to drill a little deeper on the job board and the posts question. And so I know sometimes the company themselves is not posting the job. They're using an advertising agency or sometimes a recruiter to post those jobs and to do the search for them. How does that work when there's a recruiter involved?
So there are two types of recruiters. There's one, and I've worked as both. One, you could be an internal recruiter. So you work for a company and you're employed by that company and you are recruiting internal staff who will work there with you, alongside you. Or you could work as a recruiter at a placement agency, and that agency will have often a number of different clients. So you are recruiting talent for opportunities with on-site often, or maybe off-site with those clients. So it's good to know when you are talking to the recruiter, kind of what their relationship is with the client, and definitely building that relationship so that they know what you're looking for, so they can find a role that's a good fit.
So you know, when the recruiter is the one behind the job posting, if you apply to that job post, your information is being sent to a recruiter who may or may not work inside the company. What does the recruiter do with that then? Is it just a normal vetting process like a hiring manager would do?
Absolutely. They would look and see if the hard skills are a good fit and the experience, and then they could reach out if it is a good fit, and then have a conversation on the phone, definitely an in-person interview to vet that talent before sending them either to their internal hiring manager or to their external client.
So let's say you see a great job online on a job board or on a company's career page, and you know that there's a recruiter behind that someplace. Should you apply through the job board or, you know, follow the direction of the job post, or try to reach out to the recruiter offline through some kind of outside means? Is there any advantage to the insider track?
So I definitely encourage people absolutely to be looking at job postings, because they're a clue that they're most likely could be a job that you could get. Or, oh, sorry. So I'll rewind. Okay. So to answer your question, I encourage people to look at job postings and to definitely apply through the system so that your information lives there, because that's where the recruiter will need to find it. I also encourage people, recruiters are overwhelmed as well as HR managers, so often they don't enjoy being hit up, etc., you know, with emails or texts or LinkedIn messages, because they're inundated with thousands of messages. So the best way to find out the information about that job is if you have a friend or a friend of a friend is the best way that is in that company that could make an introduction for you for that role. So the sweeping majority of people that I hired when I was an internal recruiter were referred to me by the internal staff that I was already working with. And there was already that level of trust, and you were negating risk because birds of a feather flock together. I knew they'd be the same caliber as the talent that were already employed.
Yeah, I know employers love referrals from their existing employees. And it sounds like part of that is because, you know, they already know and trust their employee. And so anyone recommended by the employee kind of comes with the pre-seal of approval.
Absolutely. And it's so appreciated. And it just, that partnership is very invaluable between a recruiter and that internal staff for them to, yeah, to guide them to the right talent if they know somebody who's a good fit.
And some organizations offer big bounties, right? Or rewards for referring candidates that eventually get hired.
Yes, we definitely had one at the places that I've worked. And when I reach out to friends and say, oh, would you like to connect, you know, and have coffee with this person? And I inquire, do you have a finder's reward? The sweeping majority of the time, the answer is yes, which is great because that incentive is important and it's invaluable to have a great referral.
Absolutely. So you said earlier that, you know, reaching out by email or LinkedIn isn't always necessarily the best play when you're trying to get that kind of inside information, that it's often better to work through a friend or a friend of a friend in the organization. What if you don't have any contacts in the organization? Is there another way to kind of get yourself known in front of decision makers?
Absolutely. Well, being in Portland and the creative market itself is smaller than we all think because everybody is connected to everybody. And if you are not, I encourage my career coaching clients to attend the wealth of incredible events that are happening and make sure you are connecting with the right people, the people that work at the companies you're interested in, and forming authentic relationships and partnerships, so that you're not only asking them to help you, but you're offering what you can do to help them as well. Because every job I've ever received, is besides the one that I applied to online, was from a partnership and somebody knowing that I wanted to be there more than anybody and helping me. And since I launched my career coaching business over a year ago, I would say all of my clients are working at places because of an internal ally that has helped them secure that opportunity.
So when you're taking this networking approach, I mean, if you've already applied for the job, is it too late in the process to start doing that networking? Do you need to like start laying the foundations 3 months, 6 months before you ever apply for the job?
I encourage everybody to be networking and to nurture their network, because I definitely believe that people who are full-time have the delusion of security and people who are freelance have the delusion of freedom. So anytime there could be a reorg and people could be laid off, which we saw last year in Portland is a great example. And that's normal in the creative industry. So it's incredibly important to always be nurturing your network and building it. And it's more authentic if you have that connection and you before the job posting goes up, so you have a pre-existing relationship versus it could be, seem a bit forced that now this job has popped up and you're trying to make a connection. So have in mind what your target companies are and start meeting people and sharing why you want to be there and why you want to contribute to those companies.
Yeah, I imagine, you know, walking up to someone at a networking event and saying like, hey, I just applied for that job at so-and-so, let's talk about it. That can be an awkward moment for both parties involved, right?
Absolutely. It's so much more authentic if you go and say, this is why I love your company, what you're doing that resonates with me or I find it incredible, and that you want to learn about them and how you can contribute so that you're building that relationship so that when an opportunity opens, they already know. And that is how I've secured a lot of my opportunities. When I moved from New York to Los Angeles, I had interned at Rolling Stone, and again, I had very limited experience as a photo producer. So I met with the magazines that I was interested in, like Los Angeles Magazine, Out in the Advocate. And when they had that opportunity with Out in the Advocate, gay advocacy magazines, they called me. Even though I had less experience, I had more passion for the brand. And they knew that I wanted to be there more than anybody.
Great. One more question for you, Christine. How does a recruiter kind of facilitate this process? Networking is clearly an important piece. Can a recruiter kind of suggest you to the right places? Can they introduce you to people? Or is that much more of kind of a transactional connecting you to opportunities they already have in hand?
I would say the latter. So they are very busy and they could offer that as well, but they have clients and they have roles they need to fill. So I really encourage my talent and to be proactive and to look online. And after I meet with my clients, I have a long list of websites that I share that include all of the creative companies and I don't know, places in Portland and groups that are having events. So, and it's specifically tailored to them. So if they're a UX designer, go to Kaifu. If they're, I don't know, in the tech industry or web developer, kind of Tao events, et cetera. So I really encourage people to be proactive about their networking and build those alliances and yeah, be out there and be relevant and be engaged.
Great. Thank you so much for this conversation, Christine. It's been great. Tell us what's coming up for you in the next year or so.
So I am excited. I just had my second PDX Creative Women Unite event and I'm continuing to partner with the other great organizations in Portland, like Ladies Night, PDX Women in Tech, so that we can all support each other and each other's events and just kind of cross promote, etc. We're building a great co-working women's space in Central Office East. So I'm excited to be a part of that. And continuing to see individual clients, planning some upcoming women's group career strategy sessions. And then also we'll be rolling out a layoff support package because so many, as we talked about, creative talent experience layoffs in Portland and globally, and they're given resources that are often generalists. So I am excited to offer companies a package that is specific to tech and to apparel from someone like myself who's worked at Adidas, who has worked with Intel, Microsoft, HP, and understands that landscape to help those creatives when they experience layoffs to be prepared to get their next opportunity quickly.
That's great, Christine.
Thank you.
If people want to learn more about you, they can go to your website. That's pdxcareercoach.com. And we'll include a link to that in our show notes. Thanks for joining us, Christine.
Thank you so much, Ben.
And we're back in the Maxis studio with Becky and Jessica. Tell me, team, what was the big takeaway you got from Christine today?
I thought it was really enlightening to hear sort of the other side of the story when you know, whether you're an internal recruiter or whatever, like she's been in those roles. And so she's like, if you have 1,000 job applications coming at you, what, you know, how do you really manage those? And so the fact of those referrals, and it just makes the recruiter's life so much easier. Like, I can totally understand why, you know, a bunch of online applications aren't going to be the way for you to find the right candidate. On the other hand, it's sort of frustrating to hear that from the job seeker side, because that's sort of the way job seekers are encouraged to get jobs. It's like, no, don't call us. Don't show up at our office. Just like apply online. So I did appreciate when Christine started to get into more of the get out there and make yourself relevant and sort of really nurture your network. Mm-hmm. I think that is the piece that's really the aha for job seekers who are like, well, I'm supposed to apply online, but yet, you know, she's like, yeah, apply online, but then get out there and meet those people in that company. And it kind of came full circle for me.
Yeah. One of the things that I remember a previous guest telling me was, oftentimes recruiters have no way to manually enter a candidate into their applicant tracking system.
Yeah.
And so if you don't apply online, they literally, even if they want to, they can't get you into the consideration process. Yeah. And so you kind of have to follow the rules that are prescribed and then do stuff on the side to mm-hmm. get your name up to the top.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about that before, of like, you know, make those connections so that you are getting your name recognized, or, you know, making those actual in-person connections that will get your foot in the door. But also you have to go through the formal process as well, or else that all that networking that you just did is kind of invalidated. But I agree with you, Becky, that it was really good to hear the other side of that, of like mm-hmm. 10,000 applicants. You can't respond to every single one of them, even though it does feel dehumanizing when you've applied and you've put all of this blood, sweat, and tears into this job application that you feel is like perfect, or for this job that you feel like is perfect for you, and then you don't hear anything at all. Like it's mm-hmm. it's really hard, but I same thing, I get it from that other side. Mm-hmm. But I liked her points about, you know, there's a lot of, especially in Portland, there's a lot of networking events and, mm-hmm. you know, going and making those connections. And I think the resource that you shared today would be really helpful also for people to utilize, mm-hmm. and just other types of things like that kind of break it into bite-sized pieces to make it a little bit more manageable. And you know, you don't have to go to a networking event every single day, but, you know, try to put yourself out there into those situations and meet people that are in the industry that you want to be in, and don't give up, you know?
Yeah.
The numbers are hard to stomach, but I mean, something will work out.
Yeah. I mean, I think oftentimes the kind of job seekers and employers exist in their own little silos and never the two shall meet. And I think both sides would really benefit from some empathy, thinking about how the other person or the other side is mm-hmm. experiencing things. And
empathy is life.
So
man.
It's, I mean, it's, you know, hearing the kind of burden that recruiters have to go through, you know, that gives you some perspective in what they're dealing with. And likewise, I mean, we've all been in the place of the job seeker, and you know how frustrating it is when you see that job online and you have no idea whether this is a real opportunity. Do they just have to put this out there? Have they already hired someone for it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you just never know how many other applicants there are, you know? And yeah, it's just hard.
Well, thank you guys for your input, and thank you, Christine, for joining us today. And thank you to our listeners for downloading today's episode of Find Your Dream Job. So the big takeaway of this episode is that networking and connections matter, and you need to really learn how to make valuable connections. And one way you can do that is through social media. So again, with our online course, How to Wow and Woo Employers Online, we teach you the basics of how to use social media to leverage connections, to meet new employers, and to make a good brand online. You can access this free course online at www.maxlist.org/wow. Again, that's maxlist.org/wow. Join us next Wednesday when our special guest will be Ann Pryor. She'll explain why you need a portfolio career and how to do it. Until next time, thanks for letting us help you find your dream job.